all, and we all kept together, you know, it was just like one big family. Now we've got, we've got the retiree center down there, and that's keeping a lot of the old folks together, you know, people that you don't see for a long time otherwise. And then us girls, well, we started this from the gym, some of the girls in the gym and the choir, you know. We decided, well, in the summer it's so hot here, why don't we try to rent a place at the sand dunes in Indiana, you know. So we went over there scouting around, and we found a very nice two-story building in Miller's Beach, Indiana. And it was owned by the principal of the Gary High School. So he didn't live there, but he used to rent it out for the summer. So we rented the one floor for $350 for the whole summer, from Decoration Day to Labor Day. So we had room for 17 people there. We 12 of us were the stockholders. We used to call ourselves stockholders. But every weekend we'd bring five other girls along, you know. And we either go on the South Shore out there, or one girl had a car, she'd take some girls in her car. And we used to split whatever the food was for the weekend, while we divided into so many parts, you know. And our food bill, used to be, if it was a dollar, over a dollar for the whole weekend, that was a lot. You know, because we had one woman, she was married, but her husband used to like to go play cards with his cronies, so she'd come out for the weekend with us. She had a 12-year-old girl, she'd bring her along. And then we were right near the beach. That was the only cottage on that whole street there, so we had plenty of sand dunes around there where we could bathe in the nude even if we wanted. Nobody could see us. Sunbathe, and we had that cottage there for years. Until, you know, some of the girls got married and they dropped out and all that, but we used to have a lot of fun over there too, you know. Like Mr. Levin and his family come out for a day. He was our manager, both of Yarnport. And Clara was the type of a person that girls would do anything for her, because she was really a wonderful woman. And until she died, we kept up the local. She was also a business agent of the necktie workers. And when she died, I had retired in 69 because I had a cataract operation in my eye, so I decided it was time for me to quit working. I worked since I was a kid. I started the union in 1919. I retired in 69, so that was 50 years. And I never went back to work, although my job was still there if I wanted it. Because even though I was 65, I still felt like 16 sometimes, you know. And I that's why now I feel that I have to take care of my mother, because my sister only worked 6 years when she first bought this house, when she went to work to pay it off, you know. And then she never worked outside of that. Her daughter's 28, so that's when she quit, when she got pregnant, when her daughter was born. And I figure she took care of my mother all these years, now it's my turn to do what I can to relieve her a little bit. And now that her husband is retired, they like to go out places too, so I'm home.
Marie, do you remember your first day of work?
Or when yes,
you first
I do.
Had it, do you remember, and like when you applied for a job?
Yes, I do. When I first started work, I started to work at John F. Cuneo's Book Foundry. My brother was working there, and he said they needed girls in one of the departments there, so he got me a job there. And I still had my hair down in braids. I was working there during school vacation. And, when I started there, they put me cleaning the covers off the machines, off of the books, you know. They used to have this gold leaf, and they used to stamp the, like on Bibles, you know, they used gold leaf. But on the other cheaper books, hard cover books, they used to use like, looked like gold, like tin foil or something. Then you had, when the brush, you had to take the excess off after they stamped the title of the book on there. And then you had to put it through a machine with two big brushes like that. So the boss came over to me and he said, you know what? When you come tomorrow, he said, you better put your hair up. He said, I'm afraid you'll turn around and your hair is going to get caught in those brushes and then you get scalped. So, boy, did I got scared, you know. The next day, I put my hair up because I was afraid I'd get caught in those brushes. Well, that was my first experience in the book buying. Well, I worked there after, when I got through the school, I went back to work. I worked there for about a year and a half. So downstairs from us, there was a girl, a woman working. There was a forelady and a lady, the International Lady Garment Workers. They weren't organized at that time, fully. She didn't work in an organized shop. So she says, they need a girl there, she said, to sew snaps on skirts. They didn't sew them by machine then, they used to sew them by hand. And she knew that I could use a needle, so she said, you want to come and work over there? She says, you're only getting $6.50 a week. She said, I can get you 10 over at my place, and you'll learn how to sew. Maybe they'll put you on a machine and all that. And I was always interested in sewing, so I went to work with her. Well, we were a group from the neighborhood there, you know, and there was one
in
girl.
The shop?
Yeah. Uh-huh. A group of girls from the neighborhood she got to go to work there. And we used to sit at a long table. There was 8 of us sitting there. And one girl, she really didn't have to work because her father had a big grocery store on the corner, and she'd bring lunch for all of us, you know, every day, and bring all kinds of food and all kinds of little snacks for us. Well, she used to sit back with her feet up on the bottom bar of the table, and she was sewing, you know, like that. So, although we wanted piecework, the boss wanted to see the work going out, so he called the forelady and he said to her, Sophie, she has to go. He says, if she wants to lay down and sleep, why don't she do that at home? He says, she has to go. So, he was laying her off that night. So Sophie came over and she says, you know what, Mary's getting laid off tonight because the boss don't like the way she works. He says, if he's laying her off, they'll all quit. So the whole 8 of us quit on him when he laid her off. We went to Stanford because we liked her. She used to bring us all kinds of things. But anyway, when he laid us off, we were going home. And I was with 2 girls that had formerly worked in a tailor shop. I was the youngest of the group. So I said, gee, I said, I'm afraid to go home and tell my mother that I quit my job. Here I quit one job to go there. I said, I'm working here a couple of months and I quit this job. Now what am I going to do? And jobs weren't so easy to get in those days. So anyway, this one girl says, well, don't say anything to your mother. Tomorrow morning, meet us at the L station. At that time, I lived in the near north side. You know where Oak Street is?
Mm-hmm.
Where the Cabrini project mm-hmm. is? Well, mm-hmm. we lived, that was our neighborhood. That was the old Italian neighborhood years ago. I lived at 922 Sedgwick Street there. And meet us at the Oak Street L station, and we'll go out and look for a job. When we get a job, then you tell your mother you quit. So that's what we did. I met them there, and we took our lunch like we were going to work. And we went to the Royal Tailors. They had worked there before. I said, well, I never worked in a tailor shop. I can work on a plain sewing machine, but I never worked on a pound. Well, whatever we tell the boss we can do, you tell him the same thing. So you'll have to put you near us, and we'll show you what to do, these 2 girls says to me. So I said, all right. So we went. Well, we went to about the Royal Tailor, we didn't go to International. We went to the Progress Tailoring Company, and they didn't need anybody. So then we went downstairs on the same building, the Progress. There was just one floor, Shapiro's was the name of it. So we went there. She said, oh, I worked for Shapiro before. Maybe you'll hire us. So he was a big, heavy-set man, you know. And I had my hair down again because, you know, I wasn't working over there, and I had long braid with my hair up. And there's your little big kid.
Excuse me.
The kid. You all look at me. Well, anyway, she wanted to know what time it was. So anyway, we went up there and he started interviewing the girl. He says, well, I could use two girls, pocket trimming, pants, you know, serging the pocket around on the pants and it, the machine trims at the same time. And, but I don't need a third one, he says, I just need two girls. So this Margaret says, either three of us or nothing, she says. And so he looked at me, and you know, I looked so pitiful, I guess, and he says, well, all right. He said, but I'm superstitious. He says, I never like to put anybody to work on the same day that I hire them. Come tomorrow. So we had the whole day to kill. What are we going to do? We went to the fair. We ate our lunch. We went to the show. We killed the whole day so that we'd come home like we were coming from work. So the next day we went there, and he put those two girls on the machine in the pants shop. And me, he put me pulling bastings, you know, cleaning. He said, have you got shears? I said, yes, I brought one along. So he put me cleaning, flipping all the little threads at the table. So I worked there doing that for about a half a day. And they had a swinging door from the pants shop to the coat shop. So he comes through the swinging door and he says, little one, get your shears and follow me. He went like that. So I picked up my scissors and I'm following him. So the girls looked up when they saw me going. They says, what happened? Where are you going? I said, I don't know. So he takes me in the coat shop. And he says to me, do you know how to use a needle? I said, yes, I do. He says, all right. Lay this out flat, she used to sew the lining onto the coat, this part. And then this part down here, you had to baste it by hand in order for the edge stitchers, the ones that sew around the edge. See, I don't know, have you ever been through a tailor shop? Well, each part of the coat is made by somebody else. You know, they have sections. Okay? So then the ones that sew the edge would have the lining, is it raining? The lining and the coat together so that they would sew it around on the machine and put the tape around. So that's what I was doing. And I had to stand up at the table. So then when I was waiting for them to bring me work, he brought me a chair. He said, little one, when you haven't got any work, sit down. Don't, you know, he was calling me little one because, you know, I was only 16 years old or so. So we worked there, I think, about 3 or 4 months when some of the people belonged to the union, though it wasn't fully organized.
The amalgamated, yeah.
The other girls, the ladies, the girl where we were sewing the snaps was the international lady down, or this was the amalgamated. Well, in 1919, they had this big drive to, you know, organize all the shops. And some of the people that worked for Shapiro and the Progress upstairs were in the union, but not all of them. It wasn't a closed shop. So they made a big drive to organize everybody. And they told us we had to join the union. So I didn't know the union from nothing, you know. So I come home and I said to my mother, they want us to join the union. Oh, then I told my mother that I quit that. Oh, and we were getting $12 a week over there. I was getting $12 a week. That was $2 more than the other place. So I told my mother I quit because I was getting more money. Well, she didn't like the idea that I quit working with Sophie, but anyhow, she got used to the idea. So I said to her, they want us to join the union. She says, well, what's Margaret and Josephine going to do? I said, well, they're going to join. She says, well, whatever they do, you do. So the next day, business agent was there with tithes and all that, fill them out, so we joined the union. And we got a $5 raise, which made us 17, which was still better, you know. And that's when I started in the tailor shop. I was brought there by somebody, and I started. In 1920, when my father died, I had a very nice foreman there. He came to the wake, and when he heard that I was the only one working, and there were five kids going to school, so when I stayed home a week, And when I went back to work, he says, well, he says, now that you're the breadwinner for the family, he says, I realize that you have to make a little more money. He says, would you like to learn something on a machine? He says, well, would you like to be a pocket maker or a lining maker or what, so you can gradually be piecework? He says, until you learn, he says, I'll give you $1.25 an hour. And he says, as soon as you get the speed where you can make more than that, he says, if you make more than that, we'll pay you, he says, but we won't get your piecework for us. So I talked with some of the people that were making pocket making and lining making. They said, well, take lining making because you don't have to match stripes or flags or all that, and it's easier for you. So that's what I did. I became a lining maker. So I was a lining maker for years. Then gradually I used to learn different, become a buttonhole maker and different types of the garments I learned how to make. So then I was doing pretty good, you know, after I got my speed and all that. So that's...
When you, Marie, when you originally had to start working, what were your attitudes? Did you want to, or were you kind of upset that you had to devote that time to it?
No, I wasn't upset. I used to enjoy working because meeting different people and, you know, we used to have a lot of fun. In fact, when I used to work at the, for the Progress Taylor Convention, the Progress upstairs bought Shapiro out. He was an elderly man, you know, and it's kind of dark in here.
Yeah.
It's dark this far.
I think it's raining a little bit.
Well, if it is, I could have stuck closing some windows. I mean, when the Progress bought Shapiro, then I worked for the Progress Tailoring Company for 23 years. No, 12 years. And we used to have more fun there. We had a group of young people. In fact, we organized then the Amalgamated Social and Athletic Club. We used to call, in fact, the girls at the cottage, we had an emblem on our, you know, tops of, we made white flags for ourselves in the top, and we had a big wheel here with AC on there, you know. And we used to go to all the boys had volleyball games and basketball games, and we used to go to Milwaukee and to Indiana to see them playing, you know, tournaments. And we started the Social Athletic Club, and I used to collect the dues, which was a quarter a month, from the people that I worked in our shop, you know. And this money was spent for social activities. We would run a dance once a month, and we'd only charge a quarter. And we really had a lot of fun, and I used to be the ringleader. I was the devil when I was a kid, you know. Every time anything went on, the boss would come out of the shop, and he'd look at me out of the office, you know, and he'd look over to me. And I'd say, Pinkus, what are you looking at me for? He says, because everything originates from you. You know, we'd sing, and one girl from way at the other end would be saying, hey, Marie, sing such and such a song. And I'd start, you know, and everybody would be singing there. And we really was like a family affair, you know. It wasn't big like Hot Schaffner Mars. We only had 350 people, including the cutters. But it was like one big happy family. So I used to enjoy working, you know. And then when we moved in together with my sister, my mother was younger in those days, I had a lot of time. Because my sister did the cooking and she took care of the house and all that. All I did is come home, eat, if I was home to eat, and sleep and take care of my own clothes. And my sister did everything. So I enjoyed working. And we'd go out in groups, you know, and so that's why I never resented working.
What kind of people worked in the shop? Were there a lot of women, a lot of men, a lot of immigrants, a lot of... Can you
generalize
about it a little bit?
Yes, we had, well, in those days, it was mostly Polish, Lithuanian, Italian, and Jewish, and Bohemian. Those were the five predominating nationalities. And we had the women, mostly were finishers, they were mostly hand workers, you know. And the men were mostly the operators, machine operators, but we had quite a few women. When I was working there, there was quite a few women operators. I don't know about the other shops, but like Sarah Rosner, she was an operator, and quite a few of the girls in a local 275 were operators. I mean, they weren't hand workers, but most of the women were hand workers, and a lot of them were Italian. In fact, when I worked at C.B. Shane, after the Progress Tailoring Company decided to get away from the union, and they, overnight, over the weekend, decided to go to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and open up a shop over there. They had, everything was planned out there. They still, we heard about it later, you know. But we went home on a Friday. We weren't supposed to work Saturday. And it was May 1st. We used to celebrate May 1st in those days. Labor. You know, so we had a program going on at the union building, and the choir was supposed to sing there. And that was the first time that we made a public appearance in the choir, you know. So when we got off the stage, some of the fellows came over and they said, "Oh boy, that was really good. What are you going to do now? What are you going to do now for a living?" Well, me thinking that they were kidding about me being on a stage singing, you know, I said, "Oh, I'm joining the opera, you know." They said, "No, we mean it. What are you going to do for a living? You know, Progress Tailoring Company is moving out." We said, "You're crazy." And they says, "Yeah, go over on Troop Street and see the trucks hauling the machines out." And Troop Street is only about three blocks. And our shop was on Troop and Harrison. So we all went down there, and sure enough, there's the trucks hauling all the everything out of the shop that they could get, you know. And without any notice, but then Monday morning, we got a letter not to report to work. Well, a lot of us went down there to get our personal things and everything. And we were picketing in front of the building, and they allowed a few at a time to go upstairs and get their scissors and whatever personal articles they had. So we went up there, and I had a couple of these that make coffee, you know, and I took the cup and I smashed it up against the machine and, you know, all that. So we picketed there for a few days, and they were dismantling the place, you know. But it didn't do us any good. They still went to Fort Wayne, Indiana. So I was out of work for about 2 months, because jobs were very, very scarce. And until I went to C.B. Shane, which Clara Leon was the business agent there, and being that I was active in the union and I was needed the job real bad, I had the family to support, I was one of the first to get a job, and I went to work at C.B. Shane, and I worked there for 23 years.
Oh, one of the first people from the other shop that got
from the shop that was let out. I was practically one of the first to get a job, and they needed a lining maker there at C.B. Shane, so Clara got me in there, you know. And so then after they struggled a while. They placed as many people as possible in other shops of these 350 people that were let out. Well, gradually, the union went out to Fort Wayne and they organized them out there again. See, the boss himself wouldn't have made that move, but we had a superintendent, Mr. Stern, that was a son of a gun, you know, and he's the one that talked Mr. Kahn into moving out of the city to get away from the union, and you don't have to pay such high wages and so forth and so on. So Mr. Kahn, the owner, took it up so bad to think that he put so many people out of work, because while we were picketing there, his chauffeur drove him over to the building, and he was going up to his office, and a Jewish woman, I can't remember her name, She went up to him, and boy, what she didn't tell him. She said, "You ought to be ashamed of yourself." He was talking to him in Jewish. She said, "For what you did to all these people, putting them out of work and taking the bread out of my children's mouth and all that." Well, he felt so bad that, you know, while they were still here in Chicago, he went in the washroom and committed suicide. The owner committed suicide. And I don't remember how many years it took the union to organize them in Fort Wayne, but they finally got organized. And then after they were organized in Fort Wayne, then they wanted to come back to Chicago.
What was that?
They figured they could get the work out better here in Chicago because they had a bigger pit of people. Where in Fort Wayne, they had to break everybody in. That was the first shop that went to Fort Wayne. You know, they had to break everybody that they had.